Hello there, Verbal Shenanigans fans. It's Scott, your boy. I want to tell you about the new sponsor we're very excited to work with. Let me try to get a work with. And that's DraftKings.com. Fantasy sports fans are winning huge cash prizes every day at DraftKings.com, America's favorite place to play daily fantasy sports. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments. Play whenever you want. Guy gets injured, no big deal. Start again the next day. Okay? You like fantasy baseball? You get a new team every day. It's awesome. Just pick your sport and draft your team. It's like a new season every time you play, so you're never stuck with the same players. Over $1 billion will be won at DraftKings.com this year, and you could be the next to win. Big. Go to DraftKings.com now and enter the promo code Shenanigans to play for free. That's Shenanigans for free entry now at DraftKings.com. Do it, people. All sorts of different sports you can play, whether you're an MMA fan, a golf fan, a racing fan, you name it, go to DraftKings.com, promo code Shenanigans.
What's going on?
You hear that?
Yeah, what's that sound?
That's the sound of a wolf, man. Several wolves.
Why do we have wolves in the studio?
Well, Mr. Burlow, I'm very excited. We're working with a new, brand new, brandy spanking new sponsor.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yes, a brand new sponsor, and I'm very excited to be part of it. You can call me part of the nation.
What kind of nation?
Well, this is Wolf Nation, spelled W-U-L-F, Wolf Nation, okay? Now, Wolf Nation is a brand new company, okay? And they got Wolf Nation Apparel, okay? It's a clothing company. Coming soon for men, women, children, and pets. So that means Obi can channel his inner wolf wearing a Wolf Nation shirt.
You can?
Yes. Right. Now, it's spelled Wolf, W-U-L-F, with a U, because it represents that unique individual. Burlo, it doesn't matter what race or size you are, but you, if you have a beard, you're part of Wolf Nation.
Ooh, I got to grow a beard to be a part of this thing.
Well, you always got, like, something going.
I got the a little scrubble going here, if you will.
You're always like half and half. You're halfway there.
I don't know if I'm in or out, but I think I want to be in on this Wolf Nation.
You're kind of like Brett Favre. You're like kind of there. You just need a little bit more salt and pepper in there. But anyway, so excited for Wolf Nation, okay? Because you know what, Michael Burlow? A beard is a man's crown, okay? Oh. And some of your most powerful men wore and still wear beards. And you know what? Most of all, women dig it. Children like to pull it, you know, like mm-hmm. Santa Claus style. Okay. So Wolf, W-U-L-F, stands for Wake Up, Live Free. And you know what, Michael Burlow?
Tell me.
This is the mindset you need to have to be a wolf, okay?
All right.
Burlow, does this sound familiar? Are you tired of working?
Yes.
Check to check?
Yes.
In a negative situation?
Yes.
Then you know what? You need to wake up, follow your dreams, and do what makes you happy.
I will.
Wolf and Wolf Nation Apparel is for anyone who has drive, ambition, and wants the best out of life. Okay? And remember, if you have a beard, you're already part of the Wolf Nation family. Okay? Mm. Holidays are coming up early before you know it, almost October, right?
Yeah.
Wolf Nation stuff for that husband, that father, that preacher, your son, okay? Your girlfriend, your wife, okay?
Anybody.
Wolf Nation is coming, so please stay tuned. Okay? As of now, website is under construction, but you can follow Wolf Nation at Instagram at Wolf Nation. You can go to Facebook, look up Wolf Nation, or Twitter at Wolf Nation _ Wolf. Also, if you want to call and get some info, you like some of the designs you see, that's 1-888-641-1003.
Scott, I'm excited.
1-888-641-1003. Wolf Nation, baby.
Be there.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, man. It is good to be back in the hot seat here, Michael. It's been a little while, you know, a week and a half or so, 2 weeks. A lot to talk about today, but it's good to be back. You last heard us. Oh, well, you heard me confessing my love for my sumo lady.
Is that why you have all this British apparel on? In your suitcase and your passport? What's going on?
Yeah, well, I packed it full of lean meats, mushrooms, and my moyashi or whatever that's called. What is it called? Moyashi?
I think so, yeah.
Something like that. Well, we were just coming off a really fun episode. But we are back in studio.
Yeah, we're back upstairs again.
You know, it's that beautiful fall weather now. The windows are open, okay? Football is upon us. Mm-hmm. Oktoberfest, pumpkin beers. I feel good, man. I feel creative. I'm not sweating, so that's always nice.
Yep.
Football's back. Which is always nice.
It's a good feeling right now.
Yeah, for most teams, but my Giants shit the bed 2 weeks in a row, so I'm not
hopefully
very
three.
Preston Parker released today. Thank God you suck. You dropped fucking 4 pounds. They just look so undisciplined, and I hate to say it. I think it's time for Tommy C to go, man.
You think so?
I think the reign is over. Not just based on this year, based on the last three and a half years. I saw a stat the other day. They're 16-26 in the last 42 games.
42 games. Well,
that's bad, man.
The only way to look at it, as aggravating as it is, the team basically was put in the spots where you could be 2-0 right now. It's not like you lost both games.
It's true.
Like 30-0. I mean, first game is just pure stupidity on Eli's part, and second game you kind of handed it to the Falcons, so. Mm-hmm.
The thing I've noticed with the Giants over the last couple of years is just very undisciplined football. It's very, like, dumb mistakes, dumb penalties, can't get the ball snapped. Just throwing away games. They could be 2-0 right now, top of the division with Dallas all banged up, you know. And now they're sitting in the basement, 0-2. And, you know, like, football is hard to crawl out, you know.
Well, I've told you this before a couple times off the air. I think the NFC East is going to be dreadful across the board. I really think the first team to 9 is going to win the division. And as sad as it sounds, my Redskins are looking kind of stable.
Right, yeah, your bastard Redskins I lost money on. I took the Rams. I really like the Rams this season. I took the Rams, and they didn't even show up, really.
No, I don't get what's up there. I guess it was just good scheming on the Redskins' part. I don't know. I didn't see most of the game, but Washington kind of controlled the whole thing. They almost let him back in. They gave up 10 points in like the first 7 minutes of the third quarter, where it's like, okay, here we go again. But they held on.
Yes. But yeah, football's back, so I'm all kind of, you know, I love my Sunday mornings, like especially if there's like a Liverpool soccer game on and then like the 1 o'clock Giants game. That is my favorite thing. I hate the night games. They're just too late.
Yeah, and we got a Thursday one, you and me, this week.
Yeah, we do, which is scary because I fear the Giants could be 0-3 by Thursday, and that's a terrible 10-day stretch till the next game.
Well, I mean, the good advantage for you guys is you're the home team, and pretty much they say 90% of the home teams win these Thursday games.
So. Yeah, but football's back. My fantasy teams are doing well, 2-0, 1-1. Okay, not bad. My one team... 2 weeks in a row, I played the second highest scoring team and won. So my team has been dominating.
Nice. You know,
like 190 points or something. Not to get all nerdy, but say my team didn't do well, right? Mm-hmm. My team just was terrible.
All right.
I could have went on DraftKings.
That's true.
I could go on DraftKings. I could go on DraftKings and play a different team every single day.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great thing about it. I mean, it's week three, and you could still go, hey, I'm not in anything. Come on the board.
Yeah, you could literally pick a team out of, like, a Monday night game. That's you can do it. So, yeah, when there's a whole new thing that we need to read later, but DraftKings.com aboard. It's nice to, like, say some sponsors on this show. It's a little different, you know?
It's weird getting the people to like us and stuff.
Yeah. So we're trying to move forward here, and if you take us up on any of these promos, it does help the podcast them. Mm-hmm. Other podcast news, the shirts are ready to be ordered. I'm just taking people's sizes, so drop me an email, drop Berlew an email. Drop the podcast an email, tweet us, send us your size, and I'll put it in a general order so I don't order like 100 mediums and no one's, there's not one medium out there.
Why did we get a bunch of girls' smalls? I don't understand this.
Why do I have all these leotards? I really thought they were going to be hot seller.
They're going to be at your funeral, and to my great-grandson, I leave you these 3,000 Verbal Shenanigans t-shirts I'm going to get rid of.
So we've done a couple things over the last week. Let's see. One, I guess it was a week and a half ago, we went to Mike Gaffney's CD release party.
Yeah, that was fun, man.
Yeah, you know, over at it was a Comedy Shop show over at Pompton Plains. Okay, and
he killed it again.
Him and Ken Kranz did a stellar job. But yeah, Gaffney just really amazed me that night because he did a whole different set than the night before, like the week before, whatever it was, 2 weeks at our show.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out his CD, and he should be joining us on the podcast relatively soon. And his CD is called My Kids Need You to Buy This, and it's on Rooftop Records. So you can literally, you can look at it on, if you're hearing this, and you're like, who the hell is Mike Gaffney? He's on Last Comic Standing. He travels all over the place. You go on Spotify now, Pandora. You can type him in, and he pops up. And the CD's good, man. I listened to it on the way to work one day.
And his stuff is killer, man. I mean, I don't want to give away any of his jokes, but me and Scott kept on. We just look at each other and say 5K, and we just start busting out laughing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when you get to that joke, you'll understand what we mean. But it's just something. It's just so dead on. You just have to That's one of those jokes where you laugh so hard you worry if you can breathe or not.
Yeah, it was. We've talked in the last couple of podcasts how need to start getting back out and do mics and stuff like that. And after I saw that show, it's kind of inspired. I was like, I got to get out. And so I went down a mic the other day and did it, and did all new material, and it felt good. You know, it felt good to do it, even if it was a very barren mic. It was like 10 people there, but. It felt good, and then I had a show on
Saturday
at Rocking Joe's in Union, and I just decided, you know what, it's a free show for the comedians. I'm not getting paid to like do a feature spot or something like that. Yeah. Like, let's let it rip, and I just let it rip, and then I had to go first too. I hate going first. inside joke.
Who are you referencing there?
No. So I went first, and I said, you know what? Let's just do it. And I felt really good about the set. I even sent you my set. It's nice to kind of break through that wall. You know, like, okay, this stuff does have legs. Because in your head, everything has legs, you know? Like,
mm-hmm.
Or the opposite. You're like, this sucks. So just doing it and even getting some reaction was a good feeling. And, you know, I get compliments from the people around me, so that was cool.
I mean, it's better to go in there almost like I can give a rat's ass, I mean, for lack of a better term,
right?
Than to go in there, I got to hit this, go to this one, got to hold pause on this one exactly the right time.
Right, and it's also
sometimes
like...
the freestyle is where you get your best stuff.
Yeah, and you have to like, it almost makes you try to build confidence that, yeah, I could be funny. Like, sometimes You base your funny in your material, not yourself sometimes. But you yourself are a funny person. And I think with the new stuff, you have to kind of be funny because you don't memorize it all. You're not fluent with it, you know?
Yeah.
So it's nice, like, and I always hear, like, the people, a couple headliners I know, like, they'll do their material, but they'll take, like, 10, 15 minutes in their set and work new stuff in their headlining set. And kind of felt like that. So it was pretty cool. And it was a good coffee shop show. It was a good crowd. You know, mm-hmm. it's tiny, so 20, 25 people is a sellout there. And it was good. It was good to work with a bunch of comedians I knew.
A lot of the podcast friends. Yes. Dean Schwartz.
Rich and Joe.
Mike Jenkins.
Yeah, so it was, you know, you see the same cast of characters all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So what's going on in the world of Berlew?
Berlew's been kind of in his own head as of late with work stuff.
Yes.
Just keeps on happening. And I told Scott, like, last night, I was so tired and sick. My work schedule has been so hectic where I've been getting calls and everything like that. It's just, like, had a terrible headache. No, I don't work on The Walking Dead.
Oh, sorry.
That's not how it works.
Oh,
time.
I wish I was on The Walking Dead.
Just felt appropriate at the time.
But I was so sick, and I was having trouble getting like regular sleep. So I'm like, all right, I got a headache, and so I'm just going to pop a bunch and a couple teaspoons of NyQuil and have a good night's sleep. And as after I did it, I kind of woke up in the middle of the night, kind of hazy, thought I heard something. I'm like, all right, whatever. Went
spiders!
Back to sleep. And when I woke up, basically there was like a huge work thing that happened over the night. So it was just so stressful. And you, I mean,
didn't you hear the Wolf Nation message before this?
I did hear it. And I wish you would have told me prior to you said story. If I only had a fuller beard.
If I only had the Wolf Nation behind me, yeah. You would have got through the day, that day a lot easier.
Yeah. I had the IT Nation on me.
The IT Nation.
Yeah. We repped the soccer field. So, yeah, that kind of drained me for a bit. And it, hopefully by the end of the week with one last project, I should be back into a shape where kind of back into my regular groove. I had some plans for some stuff on the show, but couldn't get the time to writing, so, but I'm
well,
here.
Well, we got something for later. We got something for later.
Yeah, well, I brought something for later.
Well, we got something.
I mean, we could save it.
Yeah. No. We'll get to it. You've humiliated me enough on this show. Yeah, it's your turn. But it's funny you say that. I was thinking the other day. How do you... when you take medicine, how does your body react? Are you like fine with medicine, or like this? Because medicine kicks the shit out of me.
For the most part, I'm okay with medicine. I mean, I've only had like two bad things in my life. Like one, if I use NyQuil more than enough, if I'm like overtired and I try to use some NyQuil to go to sleep, I get horrendous nightmares. Like,
really?
Yeah, like night terror type.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, what happens in them? Can you know, or you just wake up frightened?
I'm trying to think of anything in particular. It's just
spider in your bathtub turning into hundreds of spiders?
No, I've lived that in real life. I'm trying to
that's gonna get
think
old
of,
so
like,
quick.
You know what's funny? Like, I've had probably, like, 10 dreams involving Freddy Krueger. I think only, like, once it was, like an actual nightmare.
The rest is like you hanging out.
Yeah, I'd just be like walking down the street. Hey, Freddy, what's up?
Playing ball, yeah. Stickball.
Yeah. Exactly. I think I had one where like Freddy was helping me like move furniture. It's just the damnedest thing and all. Oh man, I can't get anybody to help me out. Hey, Freddy Krueger, can you help me out?
The best is that you wake up with dreams with Freddy Krueger and you're like, oh, that was a good dream, man. Me and Freddy.
Let me tell you about.
I was just gonna play that. Damn it. I'm going to add it post-production. Yeah.
But, I had that, and then, like, way long time ago when I was in high school and I had, like, really bad acne, and they had to put me on, like, the serious acne medication.
Uh-huh.
It was so severe, it drained out liquid from my eyeballs, and what basically happened was I went to go do my driver exam. And they failed me because I can only read to the second line on one of my eyes. And it was
nice.
Just so depressing. It's like, all right, I'm either going to have a ton of zits where I can drive, but nobody will want to hang around with me. Or I can have a nice clean face, but I can't go anywhere. And again, I'll be around with nobody.
God, that kid hangs out by himself, but his skin is so smooth. Yeah.
Clarissa.
Podcast is sponsored by Clearasil. They still make like I don't see a lot of ads for like Obi's
Wolf Nation.
Obi's back. Whoa, Wolf Nation right there.
I haven't seen. I think they're still in business. I mean, I've seen a lot of those like
Obi.
Justin Bieber and
the
other one. Katy Perry. I suffer from the worst acne, and they show like one pimple covered up by makeup.
Mm-hmm. What is that one? I know exactly what you're talking about.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of like maxi pads, oxy pads. I think
I had a problem with that once too, man.
I think maxi pads might still be good, but medicine. Well, I think we'll get back to the medicine call, the medicine talk after this. But we had a guest bail out today. He should be on either later in the week or next week. But I'm bringing back an old friend of the podcast, Michael Berlew.
Really?
Yes, a friend of the cast. In fact, our number one fan.
Our number one fan.
Yes. Quite an Italian man.
Is it the dude who used to get on the guy's shoulders and scream J-E-T-S, yes, yes, yes?
No, no, that's not our number one fan.
He'd be on that guy's shoulders for a while. Yeah. V-E-R-B-A-L space.
But we're bringing Dom Bagnotto onto the podcast again.
Ooh.
The director of Convenient Truth.
Proactive Skincare, by the
Proactive
way.
Skincare. So let's try to Skype him now. We're just going to do a little check-in call with our number one fan, and we'll talk about medicine and stuff like that in a minute.
Hi, Mom.
Well, that's not Dom. That's Mom.
Close enough.
I heard my name.
Wow, first try.
Could it be?
First time.
Wow, hold on one second. I'm playing Italian music. I didn't expect you to answer that quick. The Italian music was going right through the same input that you're in, so naturally. Dom, what's up, man?
Not too much. Is this? Let me know if I should like lower or raise the gain on my mic.
No, but your face is hideous. Can you do something about that? Notice how you text me video or audio call, and I opted for audio.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah, makes sense.
But we were just saying, you know. Our good guest that canceled tonight couldn't be on tonight, so I got the next best thing.
Me? Call back.
I'm totally the girl that you call when the hot girl decides she doesn't want to go out with you.
Yeah, you're like the guy, like, I have, like, 12 beers, and I'm upset. I'm like, let's just call Dom. Maybe he's around for a booty call.
I like that it was still guy, even in your fictitious version. You're like, you're the guy I call when I've had 12 beers.
What do you mean by fictitious? Things get weird here.
I know it.
But Dom, we got a exciting news. We got a new sponsor.
Really?
Yes. We got a clothing company called Wolf Nation that I'm helping doing some design work for, and they're going to sponsor the podcast.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's based around designs that have to do with beards and stuff like that.
Are they based in New Jersey? Or?
Yeah, they'll be based in Jersey. It's going to have kind of like a lot of it will have some like urban feel to it and stuff like that, but should be pretty cool.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Dom, you know, I don't really know why I brought you on the podcast, but, you know, I figured, you know, you gotta help out the, you know, the other races sometime, like, because Italians are definitely other races.
That's true. That's true.
Now, I haven't seen Dom. Well, I saw Dom. Dom, you came to the comedy show, and
I did. I loved it. They came to the third one in August.
Yes, a couple weeks ago. And your fiance, who is supposed to also come on one of these days, she won the 50-50.
She did. It was cool.
I didn't rig it at all, which is surprising.
The
now,
numbers are Dominic.
D-O.
I still didn't get it until, like, the K.
Yeah. So, two shows now that we've done the 50-50s. My cousin won and Kim won. So, that's...
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Got a lot of entertainment, and it cost us very little.
Yeah, I was going to say, it probably cost you almost nothing with the winnings.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right? So, so that was the last time I saw you. But the time before that, I saw you at... you were supposed to come to my Meatballs and Brews show, and you missed it because you...
I did come.
Because, no. Let's talk about what you did. You decided that you said you were out for a walk, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the listeners, where you were and where the bar was, about how far is that?
About 3 miles.
About 3 miles. Now... Dom, it was a late August day, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
So it was a little bit hot, you would say.
It was very sweaty, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So now, in your mind, you decided that, hey, I'm outside. Oh, I missed that show's tonight, isn't it? And you decided to walk to the bar.
That's not exactly how it happened. I was already out for a walk. I was actually listening to your podcast, in fact.
Wow.
And you said, very kind of non-evergreen way, yeah, I'll be at Meatballs Brew this Friday, which is not a good thing to do in podcasts because who knows when people are listening to it. But I
right years like, from now, people could yeah. listen to that.
Mm-hmm. There's been people showing up at that place like 5 years from now, just expecting.
Where the hell's Brennan?
There's gonna be some documentary in like 2025. Every Friday, thousands of Shenanigans fans rush to Meatballs and Brews.
Yes,
just to be disappointed.
That'll probably happen.
So yeah, I was already on this about 3 mile walk. Toward my apartment, uh-huh. I heard on the podcast, oh, Friday, that's right now, and I just diverted my route to there. But unfortunately, I was about 15 minutes too late, and I missed your set. But
yeah, and you were, that was a good set that night, by the way, too. You missed that one.
I heard.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, and I usually hate all my sets, so thanks for missing,
Me
Dom.
Too.
Thanks for
Well, that kind of, I'm very interested for both of you guys to talk a little bit more about that, actually, because I was thinking a lot about you know, I have this other friend who was actually in my film.
First off, that's a lie. You don't have friends. So let's start over.
I have this other acquaintance.
I have an associate.
I actually pissed off a lot of people when we were in high school because that's how I was. Like, I would go to great lengths to explain to them, well, you see, most people have best friends, and I consider those people
friends.
Yeah, Dom
was kind of like this dick in high school. Like this, really? Like, he wasn't like an outspoken dick, but he was like, he, like, didn't care about anybody kind of dick.
And that really hasn't changed. But I remember pissing people off because I'd explain, like, I would, like, it mattered. I'd be like, well, what people call most people call best friends, I call friends. And what most people call friends, I call acquaintances. So you might think of me as your friend, but I'm your acquaintance, and that should be okay with you.
Yeah, whoever, I don't think anyone ever admits that they're an acquaintance to somebody. It's always like, yeah, we're friends. And then, like, when you talk behind their backs and, like, to other people, yeah, he's an acquaintance of mine. You changed and said, I'm your acquaintance. Don't, you know.
Yeah. I pride myself on never doing things behind people's back for better and mostly for worse.
You're Italian. You yep. do everything behind people's back.
No, that's how it works. You do it straight to their face and just be gangster about it. So it doesn't matter.
Straight to their face. I thought it was the back of the head.
Yeah, but they never. It's when stuff of that happens, you don't actually know about it at all. So it's you know what I mean? You don't know about stuff going on behind your back, usually. It's either straight to your face or you just don't know about it at all.
To his face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you want me to do?
I like your half-Russian-Italian
yeah,
impression.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
It's a Stallone impression.
Now, Dom. So you arrived at the bar a little sweaty, correct?
Very sweaty, yeah.
And then you were like, oh, I'll just walk back.
Well, so where I was going after that
oh, yeah, that's right.
is only about a 10-minute walk, not even. So that was not a big deal. But you were very gracious and gave me a ride home. And it was cool because I got to see you and I got to see a bunch of people I hadn't seen for a while. And it was just unfortunate that I was like the sweatiest version of myself when seeing people I hadn't seen in like 10
now,
years.
Now, as an Italian male, you already have a natural sheen to you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always sweating. It's just the degrees to which I'm sweating.
Now, Dom, before we get into kind of our purpose here, first off, any updates on the film?
The film is available on contruthmovie.com. Anybody who wants to see it can buy it. I think it's $12.99, and there's a deluxe version for $14.99.
What do you get in the deluxe version?
The deluxe version comes with downloads of a couple songs that were written specifically for the film,
mm-hmm.
and I think a deleted scene as well.
Yeah. Are you in any of the scenes?
I'm in the one scene in the movie.
No, we know. Any deleted scenes?
I mean, not in the deleted. The deleted scene is actually a parody song that I wrote of a Melissa Etheridge song that the main character and his friend perform. So it's pretty funny, I think. Couldn't make the film because it didn't really make sense unless you played the whole thing, and the whole thing was like 5 minutes long, so it was just way too long to just drop into the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
But on its own, it's pretty funny. They have some pretty good improv leading up to it, a little back and forth, and then they, you know, one guy plays the guitar and the other one sings these lyrics to, you know, just basically a parody of the song that Melissa Etheridge won the Oscar for An Inconvenient Truth. Where I wrote some, you know, hopefully funny lyrics.
See, I didn't even know Melissa Etheridge won.
Only know that Come to My Window song.
Yeah.
No, she has a few songs. She has a few songs.
So you're broadcasting on the air that you're a huge Melissa Etheridge fan.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, but the character.
I go to all the Lilith fairs.
That's actually what the lead up in the deleted scene is that the main character is a huge Melissa Etheridge fan, and so he does this as sort of an homage.
Do Lilith fairs still exist? Is that still around?
I haven't heard about it in a while, but a lot of those things like Ozfest, they keep going and going, and nobody cares about it.
Yeah. Now it's like the bigger ones like Firefly and Bonnaroo and all them.
But, Coachella.
Coachella, yep. So, Dom, real quick. Now, you grew up in a kind of stereotypical Italian household, right?
Well, I grew up in an Italian household, so.
So, yeah. Now,
how often were you beaten?
How often were you beaten?
How often was beaten? Very infrequently. How often was I threatened to be different. Yeah, empty threats are
Do you still have the Sunday dinner?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
Every Sunday.
Every Sunday. How many courses?
It's usually pasta, then some sort of meat dish with like a very basic salad, and then like fruit/nuts, and then dessert.
Mm.
So five.
Like four.
Now, how long do the festivities go?
I don't know. I mean, I start at one and then until people leave. I don't know. Not really. 3 hours, maybe.
So really, it's like Sunday brunch then.
Oh yeah, it's always it is commonly called Sunday dinner, but I don't know why. I mean, everybody I know who does it, it's Sunday lunch.
Now, how many hours does your poor mom like start cooking? Like, when does she start?
She gets up at like 5 a.m. It's legit, like. And she'll always say like, "Oh, I didn't know what to make, and I don't know if I'm gonna have enough food." And then she's got leftovers for like 4 days. That's how it works.
Mm. Now, do you have problems going out to restaurants, like especially if you're gonna order Italian?
I don't have problems. I just don't do it. Like, I usually don't go to Italian restaurants, and if I'm forced to, I definitely just never order pasta. That's the worst thing. I'm not saying my mom's pasta is the best. It's just you get used to what you get used to.
No,
so
you're saying that.
Have you ever slapped somebody for suggesting the Olive Garden?
I don't know anybody who's ever suggested it, but that would definitely be a warranted thing, I think. Actually, I think it's funny. I think there's this like, you know, like teachers and things like that get gift cards for things. And I think there's this one Olive Garden gift card that's been floating around my house trying to be passed from person to person for like years because no one will ever know that.
But the breadsticks, man, come on. Yeah. That's Italian.
Yeah.
Got like butter and things on it.
All right, Don. We decided to we're gonna change it up tonight.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna change it up. You know, I said, yeah, why don't we give you a call and see what's up tonight? You suggested, why don't you interview us?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now you are now the host of the show. You'll probably do a better job than either of us, but so yeah, let it rip. Let it rip.
Yeah.
Let's get brutally honest. Let's get a little bit like The View.
I'm very grateful for this opportunity, actually. And I just want to I was glad that you set it up that way because I didn't want people to think like it was my idea, absolutely. And it wasn't like, okay, we're going to call you guys and you're going to interview us. This was, anyone who's listening, this was my idea.
Yeah,
so
whatever.
but you got, cause just because I listen to you guys all the time and I have all these questions and it's a very, obviously it's a one-way medium. So I'm happy to get to actually.
Listen, we like to be a two-way medium. Sometimes three-way when it gets weird.
Anyway, so yeah, okay. So yeah, my first question is just, you both of you have, well, when I was Scott, at least, you referenced like that. You did a little something in college in terms of stand-up, and then you didn't do anything, and then you came back to it recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know from both of you, like, I want you to tell me the story of your actual first stand-up experience, and that's both like, what made you do it? Like, what gave you the balls to do it? And then the story of, like, what that actual experience was like, you know, where it was. And
I'll go first.
Me.
Let's see. I don't know. I was a fan of comedy. I was always a fan of comedy specials and stuff like that, especially through high school. Mm-hmm. When Comedy Central used to have a lot of specials on during the day, because they used to play a lot more like comedy specials, like rather than shows and programming. It used to be like a lot of stand up, a ton of stand up. And I don't know, I always liked making people laugh for as long as I could remember. And I don't know, it was always something I wanted to do. And so in college, I remember, if you remember Teddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he, I guess he had done it a couple times, and I was like, oh, you know what? I want to give it a couple tries. And, like, he always used to say, come with me, come with me. So I took a trip to the city one day, wrote some terrible material. And if you listen to the 50th episode, I play my first comedy set, and it's absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, I remember that.
And oh, thanks.
I remember everything.
And, you know,
47.
We go there. And you go to these comedy clubs in the city, and I think you paid $5 to sign up. And I think it was Otto's Shrunken Head or the Comedy Underground, one of them. I can't remember which one it was. And you sign up, and you get called up, and I don't know, like, you completely suck. You don't know, like, I feel like back then I didn't know a thing about comedy. It was just more like me going up and trying it. And I got, like, a couple laughs. And I remember Teddy being like, that was so good. Like, and I listen to it now, and I literally get the douche chills. Like, ugh. But I remember, like, driving in, you know, taking the train in and just reading my little note card over and over and over and over again. Like, I have to say this word. I got to say, you know, like, it's more of like a script at that point than, like, a comedy. And you're like, you suck so bad. I still suck so bad. Especially when you get around people who are really good, like who've been doing it and work it, and it was absolutely 100% nerve wracking. But I think the reason I do it is one is because I love making people laugh. I don't know, that's always been part of it, and the other is probably I always need to be doing something creative, whether it be music or something. And music seemed to become harder and harder as I got older to find bandmates that had the same schedule as you and lived close to you where you could practice a certain amount. And I would get all these bands and all these bands together, and we'd get close to, like, starting to do things, and then kind of fall apart. Comedy, it's me and a microphone. There's no excuse. No one to blame. There's no one's schedule to blame besides yourself, and it's just bare bones. And if you do well, it's 100% because of you. If you do bad, it's because of you. I mean, of course, there's other factors here and there, but you control it. Like, it's just you. And I think that is, it's literally the most rewarding and most you just want to smash yourself in the face when you bomb so bad. Like, it can make or break, like, an entire week sometimes. Unless you get back up on stage and do it again, you know. So that's my answer.
All right, that's good to know. I mean, so what about you, Burler?
I pass. the first time I actually did it once, and then I didn't get back into it for 2 years. And story behind that was just I've always wanted to kind of do it. I've always had a craving to do it. Never had like a big support group in my life with certain things, and also it's always the friends that are like, yeah, man, yeah, we're going to do it. You're going to go there. We're going to come out for you, blah, blah, blah. And every time it was ever brought up, yeah, I have to Q-tip my ears and blah, blah, blah. And
can you stop begging the listeners to be your support group?
I know. You love me, people. But what basically happened was just, one night, I went on a site, and I found some place where they did an open mic, and it was, like, 2011, and I went there, and my whole plan was just to, like, watch and kind of just see other people doing an open mic and kind of go from there. And I was talking to a couple people, and they're like, oh, you going up? I'm like, no, I don't have anything ready, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, you should, you try it. And I just literally just started writing on a piece of paper. I don't even somewhat remember what my act was or what I was trying to do or what story I was told. But I kind of went up there for a little while and just, for the most part, was just like scanning over my notes to remember what I was going to talk about, whatever. And I got off the stage, and I remember the one guy who was running the mic, and who's been doing comedy for a while. He kind of came up to me. He's like, "Yeah, that was your first time?" Like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, you did pretty good. You did pretty good." And I was kind of excited. And of course, I went to the one place where it was the last night they were doing it. And I think it was like Bad Slava was the site I was on. And the biggest problem with Bad Slava is they don't really, one, update it.
Yep.
And number two, really give you a distinct, this is a comedy mic, this is a music mic, this is a poetry mic. So like every time I kind of looked into things for a while, it was just pretty much, well, that one's no longer, that's more of a poetry. And I kind of got out of it for a while, and I think it was around 2013 where I just kind of said, oh, screw it, I'll go out and find something. And I found something in Springfield, McGlynn's. I did that for a while. That was my room. And I did it for a while, but I'm, as I kind of talked about in the podcast, I'm not the most natural talker, for lack of a better term. I'm very conversationalist or whatever. So like every time I bomb, I would just like kill myself, for lack of a better term. And it just pretty much led me to, when I found out that Scotty's was doing courses and stuff, I just kind of said, screw it, and put some money into myself, and been doing that for two years.
It hasn't paid off since.
Not once. I was hoping to get some of that Wolf Nation money.
But that's actually the interesting point then, because both of you had this sort of initial thing, and then you went back, I guess, Brulu, in your case, like 2 years later, and then Brennan, even more for you.
Way more.
So like, what was it then that, what was that moment like that made you think, like, you know what, I got to do this now, and like actually do it?
I can name that. Forever, I said, I'm going to do comedy. That's what I want to do, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I put it off for so long. I did the whole house thing, getting married, get a job, all this other shit. And I was like, you can't do comedy and do that. You know, like, I don't know, all excuses you build up into your head. And I guess it was about a year and a half ago, or maybe more now. I don't even know when I started back up. Going through a lot of shitty things personally, and it was like, you know what, I'm going to do something for myself, like, for once. Like, I'm going to go do something that I want to try to pursue, and that's literally what got me out of the house. Like, you know what, I gotta step out and do something that I have been, that, and I felt like I was shit-talking, because I'd be like, oh, I did it a couple years ago, and, like, a couple years becomes 4, 5, 6 years ago. And it's like, you know, like, just do it. Just do it and see if you have any ability to do it. And if not, who cares?
And which show was that then when you went out and you were just like, I got to do something for myself?
The first mic I did was in, I guess, my rebirth stage, whatever you want to call it, was in Kenilworth. I found it online. 10th Street Live. That was the first one I went back to. And I did horrible. And I was so out of comedy, like, I did it a couple times in college, that I forgot that they give you a light. So, like, so say you got, like, 6 minutes. I'm just like, blah, 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 talking. I probably blew the light by 4 minutes. And the guy's like, dude, I was lighting you. I'm like, I didn't even see. I was so frozen up on stage. Like,
I'm in my 20th minute of comedy, and you keep blinding me with this stupid light. What the hell, man?
And, but I was going to say, mics give you, the first open mics you go to give you false confidence, because you see people that are absolutely horrible, and you say to yourself, oh, I could do better than that. Like, oh, I'm fine. And you go up and you suck equally, if not worse. And you think you did really. And if someone says something, a lot of people are just like, yeah, good job, good job. And they don't mean it, but they're just being nice. So it gives you this false confidence, but it does get you on the stage and talking. So it's like, you know.
Well, that's kind of funny, because that was kind of the same thing. Like, when I went to McLean's, like, the first time I watched it, like, I just watched it. I didn't perform. And I was texting my buddy, these guys, they don't know anything, man. I'm going to blow them away when I go up there. And they're just...
I'm gonna kill tonight. First thing I said, I get this great Ultimate Warrior joke. It's going to be so good. Bomb.
Well, you know what's interesting is that, like, I feel like obviously, if somebody, you see somebody bad, you're like, I could do better than that. But like the reverse is also true too. I find that when you see something really good, you don't think like, wow, that guy's amazing, I can't touch that. You think like, that's so good, I want to do that. Like, you, like when you see a good play, you want to go right up. But like when you see a good movie, like seeing good stuff inspires you to want to do it. And seeing bad stuff makes you think, I could do it. So it's almost like if you're immersed in that world, eventually you're going
to
be like,
that
I want
to do it. That point is more and more relevant to me ever than now. We were just talking about, right before we Skyped you in, we went and saw Mike Gaffney, who was the headliner at the show you went to.
Yeah, really funny.
Yeah, we went to his CD release party the other night, and he did basically a completely different hour on stage and just ripped the room in half. And it literally, I just said like maybe 20 minutes ago, it motivated me to go back out and do some mics, even if even with my crazy schedule right now, like just to go out and do it. Like, because you take things from comedians who are good, like, holy shit, like look how he does this, or how he calms down, or how he paces himself, or how he has so much character into that joke, and he uses voice. Like, it's now like, more than ever, I look at good comics I respect, I'm like, wow, these guys are good. I want to be that good.
Because, like, creativity breeds creativity. It's not like there's a finite amount of creativity, and, like, if that guy's using it all up, then it's like, then it's gone. It's the opposite of that. It's like, the more you're around creative people and in that, like, the more you can be creative. So I fully believe that, at least. But
just like
that
little things, like you could take little things, like look how he just relaxed when the joke didn't go over well and said something like something so small can change your entire set. Whereas like when you're so nervous and one joke doesn't go over well or you say something wrong, you go, you bomb, you know, like you lose your whole train of thought.
That's the worst feeling when you're nervous up there and a joke bombs, and you can tell the audience can tell that you're nervous, and they never. It's never, oh, it's okay. They just kind of tense up more. No, you got to do better than that.
Yeah.
Well, that it all kind of leads me to this question of like, kind of like, do you have to be a little bit arrogant to be a stand-up? Or like, would you call yourself, would you say like, I'm a stand-up? Or at what point would you say that? Or
nope,
to what extent is there like the imposter syndrome where like even really successful people think like, you know, they're going to find me out. It's not really me. Like, so that, I'm really interested in that. Like, what do you guys think about that?
I think personally for me, I think it's almost the opposite of arrogance. It's this weird community of weird people who all have problems among problems, whether it's addiction problems, relationship problems, not everyone, but 99% of them, like some of these guys kill on stage and then they're just like completely awkward to talk to. And some guys are just complete assholes and are that arrogant, but they're good on stage. So it's like, to me, it's more of like, I feel like I am fulfilling that creative side of myself. Like, honestly, I've been able, like I haven't been playing a lot of music or like editing a lot, but this has definitely like taken over. Like, This podcast itself and the comedy is all I want to do. It's all I want to do. It's what I think about all the time. Even when I'm not doing it, I'm kicking myself like, got to do it, got to do it, got to do it. So I don't think it's arrogance. I do think it takes...
You got to have a pair of balls. I mean, that's...
Yeah, or something, or like some kind of blind spot or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, but also, like, what about the reverse of that, right? Like, because let's say it's not arrogance, but let's say... Like, the imposter syndrome thing is really interesting to me, which is, like, somebody who's, at this point, like, a famous actor who still, you'll hear in interviews say, like, oh, I still feel I'm on set, and I feel like they're going to find me out that I'm terrible and that, like, or, like, just me knowing you, I feel like it would probably be hard for you to be, like, introduce yourself and be like, hi, I'm Scott, I'm a stand-up comedian, you know, like, what is the, that's a really interesting thing to me. Yeah. It's like, where's the line? Like, when are you going to allow yourself to own that? Like,
it's true.
Or is it that people who do own that are all tools, you know, cause that can be true too. But it's like, do you guys think about that? Like, Burley, what about you? Do you want to?
Well, I mean, my thought process is basically the people who have made it, they have that right to that arrogance because there are so many open micers out there. It's just like, I'm the shit, man. I know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And you kind of sit back and going, yeah, but you're doing the same kind of shows that I'm doing, and I know anything. So it's just a matter of, I mean, whatever gets you home and makes you happy, I guess somehow some people feel. But I pretty much can say, I mean, we talked about before, me and Scott, we can hang out with the humble people 1,000 times more than these people
who just want to either, you know, float their own boat or just start going on the ragging stages of everybody else who goes on stage.
Yeah, I think it's like, I even had a hard time putting like a picture of me doing comedy on like Facebook because I'm like, oh man, now everyone's gonna be like, oh, you do this, you do this. Like people at work ask me like, oh, you do comedy, like. And then as soon as you open that up, it's like, well, you should use this. I could be in your like this could be in your routine, or what do you talk about? What do you talk about? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, man. Just come see me. I don't know, or don't mm-hmm. see me. Just kind of leave me alone. I don't know.
But it's interesting because it's like even what Burlew said too about like, well, there's some people who have made it, and like I have that question of like, well, what has made it? You know, like what do you guys think you'd have to do to be able to feel sit back and be like,
I know,
all right, I've made it.
I've had a great conversation with Joe Fernandez before. He's been on the podcast once or twice, and mm-hmm. I worked with him for many, many years at the TV station. And to me, making it in comedy would be, just for me, it would be getting paid and booked to do comedy consistently, not living off of it. To me, like making it for me is like, oh, Scott Brennan's got one headlining show a week. He's got two shows a week. I'm getting paid some money.
Get a feature here. I'm going to be
a headline there. You know, like
I'm going to be the opener over here.
Like to me, that's making it. But it's more of a game to try to get better and better and better. The guys who are featuring and getting headline spots here and there want to be full-time headliners. The headliners want to mm-hmm. headline all over the country. They want to only do comedy. So for me, as far as a goal, I guess, like a long, it's still very long term, would be to be constantly getting booked and to be getting paid to always do comedy. Like, I've been paid here and there, but nothing, trust me, nothing crazy.
Would you still be booking those things yourself, or is that like somebody else booking you? Because, like, it's a really interesting, like, the more you drill down into it, the more you, like, you realize, like, well, maybe that wouldn't be enough, or maybe that would be enough. It's like a really, like, if you're still, let's say you could get booked once a week mm-hmm. and you could make, you know, $500 a month doing right. comedy.
Okay.
But you had to put in 3 hours every single night of your own legwork to get those bookings.
Right.
Like, that becomes like a job then at mm-hmm. that point. Like, is that,
I think,
that, I don't know, that count? I don't know.
I don't think you can be, I think also part of it is I don't think you can be like, I made it, I'm comfortable here. You have to. The best comics are always writing and always getting better. So I think even where you are, you want something more. Like you want to get
right.
yeah. at least the good comics. Like I could think of a couple of comics we know who they've reached this one level and I don't see them going anywhere and they yeah. get bookings. Mm-hmm. every once in a while, but they don't do anything new ever. They don't work. They've had this set for 10 years and this is what they do. Like to me, successful would be to keep working and just be able to keep getting more or getting better. I don't know.
You're saying it's like, it's about the process itself.
I think so.
If you can continually seeing somebody growing and continually seeing them out there. I mean, I guess that's the best thing I can say.
Yeah. So, but like, is that something you hold true? Then you would say like, both of you and the comedians that you guys are around, like you enjoy the creative process, like you enjoy the actual writing itself. You enjoy actually being on stage, and it's not only that you enjoy getting laughs. Like it's not only that you enjoy the results.
I enjoy most writing something from scratch, and then it getting laughs. Like, mm-hmm. so it is a little bit of both. Because you could write all day long, but if you don't get the laughs, either your writing or your performance wasn't good.
But I guess mm-hmm. also in a way, if we see somebody keep on working on something, when we see it at first, it's like, I don't know, man. It's, I mean, some comedians, they just keep on pounding it, and they find that angle.
Mm-hmm. And to me, comedy seems like it's like erosion, man. It just keeps mm-hmm. forming different shapes over time. Like a lot of guys... like that we know that our headliners have talked to me and been like, you know, like you could always get more out of a bit. You could squeeze more out of it. You could find a different angle from it. Go one night at a mic and take a complete different angle. Start it from the end and work it backwards mm-hmm. or something. Like there's always something else there. And I think personally, I think other than like the 80s when comedy was like literally at every bar, and I think we are in the golden age of comedy again. We're in a second coming because it's accessible and people can go find any comic they want now. Any comic they want, whether it's a podcast, you could hear your comics, you could Periscope your comics, you become like friends with these guys. If you listen to a podcast like every week, you almost become like friends with them. You know more about their life than anything, and they yeah. talk about comedy, and they have comedians on, and you hear them talk about the business, and it's like there's more information out there now about the business than I think there ever was.
Yeah,
like absolutely. Ever.
It's just now you have the reverse, which is also so much is out there that how do you get people to discover you That's as true. Opposed to the next thousand? It's a different problem. But yep. I mean, just speaking of the podcast, like I wanted to ask you both how you deal with like those are vastly different media, right? Like stand up is this instant feedback. You write something, you say it, and then people laugh. It's like you know immediately.
Right.
The podcast is the opposite. It's like you're kind of talking in this vacuum. It goes up a month later. You have no idea if people are listening, if there's any response question. To it. Like, how do you deal with those two like completely different things?
Well, I guess I should start this one.
Yeah.
I literally did the podcast because I did radio show a radio show on tapes with my friend Alex in middle school.
Right.
And I've always loved radio. And literally when I found out about the medium of podcasting, I was like, "Oh, so you mean I could do a radio show in my home and release it and even have one person hear it?" Now, I started doing it. I recorded like 8 episodes, 10 episodes before I even put them out. And I was tempted to not put them out because I was like, you know, like what do people don't like? And one of my biggest regrets is I should have put out one a week like we do now or whatever, or 2 a week. I released 8. I was like, everybody listen, here's 8 episodes, love me, you know, like instead of gaining any, not even giving a chance for like any kind of building audience, like, hey, this episode was great, I'll listen to the next one. I'm like, here's 8 hours of me talking. But literally it was just me. And then eventually I got, you know, like our friend Taryn, our friend Juan, to talk about some. But even the first ones, if I listened back, it was so structured. I'm like, today we're going to talk about technology. Go. Blah, 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 you know, like, and I couldn't, I mean, I could relax. It was always fun. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it. But now it's like, sometimes I get Berlo over here and we have nothing to talk about. Okay. And it's like, when I hit record, it's like, we kind of work our way through conversation. Is it always great? No. Okay. Do we kind of know when it's not great? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If it sucks really bad, there's probably 4, 5, 6 episodes we haven't released. One, if they're really, I don't know, like we don't like to get like real vulgar on the show. And there's been a couple that we've definitely gotten vulgar and we're like, I don't know if this is exactly what we're going for. Other ones that suck, and it is talking into a vacuum. Literally not one person can hear this interview right now ever. And I don't know. To me, it has been probably one of the most rewarding things I've ever done is this little podcast. Because one, it's like, it's kind of like a diary. It's like a verbal diary, okay? Mm-hmm. Which was the name. No, it wasn't the original name. But it is this tracking of stories from the past, talking to people that I never in a million years thought I'd get to talk to. And then just you releasing it. No one has to pay for it, and if they want to listen, they can. And getting any kind of feedback is like the best thing ever. Literally, if 5 people are like, "I heard that episode," I'm like, "That's awesome, man!" Like 5 people have heard this, you know. So I guess the reward is me. For me, it's just being creative. It's a way to be creative on a like I've gotten jokes from us talking about stories. I've gotten ideas for other podcasts. Like every. I feel like everyone just breeds something else, you know, like it just opens something else up.
But and I just want to say as like a listener too, some of the time where you guys sit down and have nothing to talk about, they tend to, I think, be the ones where you just talk a little bit more about like what's happening in your lives, and mm-hmm. maybe they get a little bit more deep and they're not so. But I love a lot of those episodes. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I mean,
we
definitely
do too. There's a lot of times we'll like look at each other afterwards and like, that was a really good one. Like, mm-hmm. and you know, like that was a good one. Like, didn't expect that, you know, because like, yeah, we'll have like right now I have a blue card in front of my face with like four talking points, five talking points. And it's like, yeah, they're talking points, but I've only hit on like two of them and I'm like, eh, whatever, you know. But I think that's it for me.
I mean, I've really enjoyed coming on to the podcast. I think I feel more comfortable in my comedy as in like a tit for tat, where I've always found like when I try to write jokes, it's kind of hard because like when I'm around a couple people, I'm one of those, somebody says something, I can have just an out of the blue reaction kind of thing, which would get a laugh, versus trying to write a whole structure of a comedy set, mm-hmm. and so forth. I mean, it just seems more comfortable to me. I mean, like, I haven't been on the stage in a little bit, mainly because of like my work stuff and whatever, and this still allows me to give me my outlet where I can just like talk about some stuff, do some comedy, kind of get me into the kind of mood, because I would say I wear my feelings on my sleeves, if you will, and when I'm not in a good mood for whatever reason, it's kind of hard for me to kind of get into that good attitude of I'm going to get on stage and I'm going to entertain all of you and you're going to like me and I'm the only one up here. Whereas here, I can kind of feed off of like Scott's emotions and then kind of get me out of a mood and then kind of remind me of some stuff and yeah, whatever.
I think it's funny you said it. Like I could usually tell when you're in a mood or some mood or whatnot. You know, we're kind of like a couple at this point. But I think as soon as I hit the record button, you put that shit away for an hour or an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it literally gets you out of that a lot of times. It definitely, whether we're talking to someone interesting or literally being retards on the air or like you're doing some weird impression. Yeah, exactly. I could see it like just in your mannerisms, it gets you out of it and brings you out of it. So that's kind of interesting too. Like, never really thought of that either. But
so like, it's interesting, Bruce, like mentioning like his job and everything. And I know, Scott, you're a teacher. I have a job. And one of the other things I wanted to make sure I asked you about is just like, because I think about this a lot, is just like, is this the future of creative people? And like, is this enough? So basically, do we become a world where like, art is a hobby that everyone has and it costs them money instead of making money, like, and then everybody has a job to pay for their quote-unquote like real lives? Because
that's a great question.
I feel like that's kind of,
you're like the Italian Barbara Walters right now.
But it's just, I feel like everyone I know who's actually doing like good examples, like they're actually being really proactive and like getting stuff done, they're doing it not because they like took that leap and they just like are playing it by ear and like they don't care about debt and they're like becoming a starving artist. They're like, they have a steady job,
yeah,
and they're also making time to do creative stuff.
So yeah, that's a pretty interesting question. The future of creativity, who knows? That I think that's way too big of a question to really answer, but I think there's so many pluses to everyone being able to put video and like literally think about Periscope. Think about that technology. You can host your own TV show or whatever you want to call it every single day that you want and have an audience and gain an audience, know exactly how many people are watching it without any ratings or anything. Hey, I got 300 people on my Periscope today, you know, like watching some show that I did or podcast. Now I could look at every episode we have and tell you exactly how many listeners listen to each one.
Mm-hmm.
So the feedback is amazing, you know, like as opposed to like back in the day you got hired on a sitcom, you know, like you got to wait for all these ratings to come in. Like the feedback is almost instant. And I think you may know with like the movie, you see exactly how many people bought the movie or so I think that's a good way. I think the money thing is still so up in the air. I think people are really trying to figure out how to make money, like we are right now, like looking for different advertisers and how we actually bought a course, how to make money podcasting. I think it's up in the air, and I think also the creative side will also find a way to make money from it. Mm-hmm. But I never set out, like, from day one, like, doing this. I never even, literally until, like, maybe 5 months, 4 months ago, I was like, I never even thought about making money from this. And I'm like, oh, maybe I can just cover the costs of it and maybe have a couple bucks to buy a new microphone or something like that. And that would be perfect. To me, that's successful for the... I think even the best podcast can't be making millions from it. They must be making some money, but...
Maybe like the top ones, like Marin,
Rogan, maybe.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them is kind of like... And this is kind of, I guess, what you guys are doing with River Shenanigans, but it's kind of like... They build a brand, they build a built-in audience that they can then market to, so that in the smallest example, you guys have a show and you're reaching out to more people who can you can let know about the show to sell tickets. But in the grander scheme, like if you eventually have thousands of people listening to you, then anything that you want them to know about, that's like that having that list of people who've opted in is like that's what is like the most powerful thing in terms of like monetizing things.
Right. And it's direct. It's direct. Mm-hmm. Anyone who listens to the podcast is listening, is hearing everything that I want on the podcast. Like there's no company telling me what to do or what to put on or what to cut out. Or it's literally, I have complete control over my entire medium. I have complete control.
Except for me.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't get rid of Berlew yet, but those of you who are looking for a co-hosting job, just email verbalshenaniganspodcast@gmail.com.
But that's an interesting question, though. Like, what do you guys think about that? Like, what is next? What is your goal? Or is that not,
yes,
not
yes.
time for that yet?
Right now, I would tell you the goal on air is to gain more listenership. Yeah. Goal number one. Goal number two, to maybe make a little bit of money from it. Goal number three, I want to take the brand Verbal Shenanigans and make it into other things. I want to do comedy shows with it. I want to trying to work on a website. I want to do like videos and stuff like that. Like even that little Waking Obi video, which I need to get on the second episode. I have the footage.
Number one in a series of one.
Yeah, number one in the series of one. Do videos and make it more like a place you can go for lots of creative things. So I don't know.
I mean, I think. The starving artist, if you will, I think from here on out, we're always going to have this outlet. I mean, you just look in the history of everything. You look at how music changed when MTV came on and videos came out and people started saying, that's how I can get my music out, make this crazy music video and get people to listen. I think with all the outlets, with the Facebook and the Twitter and the YouTube, we're always going to have that outlet. Even if somebody's not terribly serious, they can always just keep on throwing out stuff. And sometimes you're going to just get lightning in a bottle and somebody's going to find something. But I think, since of the fact that everything is just so open and we have all this technology that's just readily available, and they just keep on advancing the technology to make it easier. I mean, Periscope may replace YouTube the way things are going, how easy it is. Just get on your phone and do a video. So I think there will always be an outlet for that, and it's not going to be not as much the old ways where it's pretty much you got to go to some kind of casting director or something like that and say, no, let me just put your faith in me. Now it's pretty much, no, seriously, look what I did. Now you invest in me.
Right, and that's kind of the beauty of it. You don't make it, you could find another way around. You could find a way in, you know, a way to people.
I mean, I think I agree with everything you're saying, but I think that there's an upper limit to that, right? Like, that's all true, but that's because we're talking about podcasts, we're talking about stand-up comedy, we're talking about, to a certain degree, like simple music setups. These are all things that we can do for cheap, right? But it also means that if you're always playing to the cheapest possible option, like... I love little indie movies that cost nothing, but I also love huge blockbuster movies. And like, if people don't pay for anything ever, then they're not going to make movies that cost $100 million to make.
It's true.
And so it's like, you know, the Waking Obi video is great and you can do it for almost nothing. But at what point do you say, you know, I have this great idea for this awesome sketch that would actually cost us $10,000 to make? Do you just never do that, or do you find the cheap version of that
and
then
point.
Try to be happy with it, or you know, like, so that's I think in general, like the democratization of all this is a great thing. I think it's better that everyone can make a lot of stuff. I would never say that I'd rather live in a time where that isn't true. I wouldn't have been able to make a movie if that wasn't true.
Right.
But there's a it comes down to the question of like creative compromise too, right? Because like you said, like I find this in general with creative people, if you can rely on your creativity, you can always find a way, right? You can say, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to be determined. I'm going to make this happen. And that's mm-hmm. a great thing. But it also means that the version, like the answer to that, the version that you can make, yeah, that's one version, but it's maybe not the best version.
A good point. So it almost makes you think smaller than bigger initially, you know? It's like...
It really depends on who's doing the dreaming, for lack of a better term. Some people are just terribly happy doing... You know, bare nuts, hey, I'm going to go out and do this thing, and if I even make $5, I'll be terribly happy, and that's it.
Well, it's not about making money even, it's about raising the money to make the thing in the first place.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm a writer-director, and I always think, I've always felt like I would never write something to be cheap. I would never write something to say, well, what's a cheap movie that I can actually make? And actually, that's the exact advice that a lot of people are giving young filmmakers now. You know, like take stock for what you have, the locations, the people, the equipment, and then write something you can make based on that. And I think that's a great, you know, way to look at it, or a great way to approach it. But it's also a really limiting way to approach it. Like I want to write something where my imagination is the limit and then figure out how to make that thing. Mm-hmm. And some of those things cost a lot of money. Yeah.
But I also think, you know, with all this, sometimes you got to take a bet on yourself. You got to put a bet on yourself. Like, if your product is that good, there will be someone to fund that or something or a way to do it. Mm-hmm. Will there be compromise? Of course. Mm-hmm. But I still believe in, if you have this amazing story and this idea and something original that someone wants, if people want it, it can be made. Like, it can and will be made.
What I'm saying, I agree with that. What I'm saying is, if people want it for free and it costs a lot to make it, then how do you get that money? Because no one's going to give you money to make something that you're going to give away for free.
Right. Well, I mean, like, I guess that's the borderline. Like, is it going to be sold or is it going to be viewed for free? I think that's a decision you know you're going to make, especially like. Like in your field, it's a whole lot different. Okay, you can't make a film for free. Period. Okay, mm-hmm. So you have to decide: am I trying to get this out there to people, or am I trying to get something funded? And I think you would direct your efforts into getting it funded, or you would direct your efforts into making it. Like it's kind of you can go either way. You know, it's kind of a fork in the road. Obviously, they all combine at some point, mm-hmm. but I think. You know, it okay. So you have this million dollar idea. Okay, you have to put the work in to find it. I mean, I think that's kind of the way it is. You got to go find someone or something or some company or some place that wants it just as much as you do. You got to sell yourself. Yeah, like at some point you have to put a bet on yourself, mm-hmm. and you can't let like oh media has changed so much and that like that and like just push you down because. Someone's going to need a film in the future. Someone's going to need radio in the future, whatever you call this, internet radio or a podcast or whatever. Someone's going to need comedy. So someone's going to be big. Someone's going to be small. Someone's going to be medium. And I think there's going to be ways to find it, whether it be luck or whether it be effort. I think somehow the cream will rise. I think there are... Of course, it's so easy to take movies and be like, oh, they all suck now, blah, blah, blah. But every once in a while, there's a freaking amazing movie that rises to the top and gets out there. And you look at it, and it's like written by blah, 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 adapted by blah, 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 and produced by some monster, you know, like some monster in the industry. So you can't, I think the whole point is you can't give up. Do you have to work a normal day job? Of course. But you could also take it the other way. You could take it the other way, like in, like say, comedy. Like in the 1960s and 70s, there was barely anyone doing it. And mm-hmm. some of these guys took risks and made no money for 20 years. Freaking Rodney Dangerfield was a aluminum siding salesman, salesman or something like that. The guy didn't hit big until he was like 60, 55 or something like that. So I don't know. I don't think there's one answer. I don't think there's one way. I think new ways will always open up. That's for sure. Because someone wants to see a movie. Someone wants to hear radio. Someone wants to see comedy. Someone wants to hear music. So how you find that way, I have no idea. I have no idea where it's going. But new things open up. And I think you have to be, now more than ever, you have to be as open as possible. Like, hey, we got to try everything here.
No, I mean, it's obviously a big topic. I mean, and honestly, I worry about it more, not even in terms of the actual production of, because even me, like, I mean, I made a movie that was, it was cost more money than I had. It cost a lot of money, but I still figured out a way to make it happen. But my question, my real issue with it is, I just, I hope that, you know, kids coming up don't always, don't all dream small. They don't all start with, like, the logistics of what can I do. They want to, I hope they start with what do I want to do. And the other thing is, I worry that where the money really comes into play isn't producing the stuff, but the people who control advertising. So that you could make something great and your little niche audience will see it, but if it really comes down to the people who have $20 million to market it and put it all over TV and ads and people see it, people see things based on that. And like the more, I mean, the more they control, it basically just becomes the money chooses what art thing or whatever has an audience as opposed to the actual quality of the thing, which I guess is how it is now, but it just seems like it could be going more in that direction.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, that's so much bigger than I can answer. Yeah. I just think there's different ways through everything. Like, you're gonna, people are going to find a way. Great projects are going to fail, you know. Then great projects will never be seen or heard or listened to or watched. But it's just the game you play, you know.
Yeah, and I think in the end, money's always going to be a factor. I mean, you even look at, like, the grassroots things. Like, you look at YouTube stars like PewDiePie, who's mega, I think he's like the biggest YouTube star right now. I mean, half the reason why he gets money is basically after he gets his popularity is all the big video game companies are like, okay, play my game, put a video out on my game, and they're paying him just for their game. So I think there's still always going to be control on them, no matter how you circle it around.
I think the point is, unless you have your own money to put something out, you're relying on someone else. That's what it always comes down to.
Which is fine. It's always been that way. But my issue is when it actually affects the decisions about the art. Like, if it's after the fact, that's one thing. But like, another piece of advice I see a lot of people giving young filmmakers now is cast YouTubers in your movie because they have a big following and you have a built-in audience. And it's like, if you were going to cast that person anyway and they're great for the role, that's one thing. But if you're making an inferior product because your lead actress has a million YouTube followers, like that.
On the other hand, though, like take it the other way. Has it ever been really different? Hey, cast this gigantic celebrity in a movie. Are they the best actor? Probably not. Do they have a million people that would go see them on the day the film is released? Yes. Or, you know, cast this person. They're a friend of the producers. Let him at least be this character. I think it's just a different way.
That's always been that way, but that's at the level of studio, which is almost like a different realm. Like, I'm talking more about, I feel like that mentality has infected, you know, like you and me and the people who are new and like coming up. And it's like, that's what I worry about, because there's always been the studio. There's always been the establishment or whatever. But if that gets drilled down into like independent film or like the, if that gets drilled down to the people who are coming up and they start thinking like cynically like that to me makes me worry about the products that are going to actually come out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we'll see.
I think it just, in the end, you got to start off not thinking about money. Then you have to get to a point where you have to start thinking about it.
Right.
And that's the only way you're going to hold your integrity.
Right. And I just hope people can do that. Cause I feel like that I do worry about that. I worry about people thinking logistically and cynically and worrying about money from the beginning as opposed to just making what they want to make.
Yeah. Well, don't worry, Dom. We have officially made $0. We spent a lot of dollars. And we're 70-something episodes in, so we're still here.
DraftKings.com.
DraftKings.com, Audible.com, Wolf Nation!
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't know. We've been talking for about an hour now, so I don't know.
No. You got a last question?
One last question. That's how about who's the weirdest person that since you've been
me. Berlu?
No. Okay, who's the second weirdest person who since you've been doing this podcast either came up to you or you found out somehow like that they listened to an episode and you were just like, holy shit, like
no one.
Or like what?
Nobody ever. No. That's a really weird. I don't even know.
I mean, I know just like just because you put it out there, and like even just at one point, like one of my brothers was like mentioning something about the Marcelo Balboa interview thing. He's like, "Oh yeah, listen to that." And I was just like, oh, "Wow!" Like, because that's the thing. Like these metrics of like these numbers that go up. Like it's satisfying, but it also doesn't really capture like the quality of like that network of like it'd be interesting to know like who's actually listening. And. And like you said, if you listen to people who listen to podcasts all the time, people have week by week, you feel like they're your friend and you know them. And I know I have a lot of podcasts that I listen to that are like mm-hmm. that. So I wonder like how many people are out there like who haven't seen you in 15 years who are listening and being like, wow, this is cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I'll get like I guess I there's no like one person because like I can't think of a person that's ever come up to me and been like that. But on social media, I find some weird things. Like I found like random people, like you said, in 15 years will like a status or something from Verbal Shenanigans or like blah, 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 likes the page. I'm like, oh shit. Like, I don't even remember them. And then one time I was on, like someone put up a status and it was like a joke or something like that. And I was reading through like the comments and it was like, oh yeah, I heard that on Verbal Shenanigans. I'm like, what? You know, like that was kind of weird, but never like in person. I guess we're not that big yet.
Well, yeah, I didn't expect it to be in person, but even just like that, just like a like or a comment.
So, right. My answer is Tom Cruise.
I mean, I guess like recently, like when I was promoting over the weekend some of our shows, I kind of came across somebody who just randomly put on their, I guess there's a Facebook feature where you can do a comment, and somebody was like really excited that we talked about Greg Oliver and talked about Lemmy, and they're like, "Oh, ole ole, I love Lemmy, yes, yes." And it was just one out of blue where it was as I was like posting something, like I've never noticed that white little box before, and it's kind of like, "Oh, okay." Somebody was
excited. Well, because you're into black box.
Oh yeah.
But you talked about Periscope a couple of times too, and I know one point you were trying to do it.
Yeah.
Have you guys toyed with doing
we'll
like a live?
We'll bring it back.
We thought about it. I mean, that episode we weren't really doing anything exciting. We were just like talking to each other, so it was kind of hard.
And
it was like
more
an alpha
it was more of you trying to get into the view of the picture.
I wanted them to see us together. You know,
see, I don't want that.
I want a live episode where you guys just make out for like a minute and a half.
That's a little weird.
Well, that's one. That's a lull.
Those Italians. That's what they're into.
That's what
into,
I assume
though.
You guys are doing whenever there's a lull. So
that's first off, there are no lulls. Thank you very much. Second off, you're Italian and you're kind of into those kind of things.
Yeah.
All you Europeans have way too much time on their hands, so they're like, "Yeah, I'd like to see the host of the show just make out for a little bit."
Yeah.
It's usually women though.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've seen you guys wear capris before, so. But anyway, I think we're going to wrap it up there now that I told you we're going to pop you on for 20 minutes. But anyway, again, one more time, Dom, the film website.
It's contruthmovie.com. So that shortened from convenient truth movie. So contruthmovie.com.
Okay. And soon we'll have your soon-to-be wife on the show.
Yeah, hopefully play some music. And
so I really think that Dom's just using the podcast for his own venture capital.
That's his way of promoting his stuff. Without
and it's worked really well.
Basically, his interview was like, yeah, so how can I use this podcast for, can my brother and mother come on? And they, you know.
Berlu's mom has been on, so yeah,
that's
that
true.
Was a good episode.
That's
parents,
true.
Yeah.
That's true.
The Buckaloos.
Yes, those horse-stealing bastards.
That's what we do.
But yes, That was a lot of fun. That was it was different getting interviewed. I kind of liked it. Hmm. I didn't have to think. Well, I thought, but only when I was asked something.
No, I'm
instead of like
that.
Usually I got to think about like how can I make Berlu seem normal? How can I tame him? Is he gonna do something weird? Is gonna get kicked off the air somehow on the internet?
Yeah, look, plop here.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got to, you know, actually ask a few. So, like I said, it was a little more two-way. I got to ask some questions that I had about this whole Verbal Shenanigans brand / ecosystem that you've created here.
Now, if you were the host of this podcast, would it be like Verbal Parmesan?
That's a good question. It would probably just be a curse word in Italian.
it would be called Acquaintances. Bungo. There's a podcast where you just call up all your acquaintances and it's a 10-minute conversation and you tell them that we were never friends. Yeah, live on the air.
I already did that in high school, though, so it's like people.
Even better. Actually, now you'd be like, yeah, this is Don Bagnato from Acquaintance. Who? You proved my point. The end. Anyway, Dom, I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Have a good night.
Talk to you, man.
Well, now that we had a quick 10-minute segment with Dom, it's kind of different, man. It was kind of different being on the other end of it.
Yeah.
I liked it. You know, something different. And it, exactly like he said, like maybe an episode where we didn't have much turned into a whole lot. So I think I'm going to save the medicine story and...
Okay. Not everything?
No.
No?
Not everything. No. I'm actually going to stop it right here because we have one more thing. Well, finally got to get interviewed. We took a little break there and we're back.
We were in the hot seat.
This may be a little longer, but I liked it. It was good to get back and just talking and...
talk.
Mm. Or whatever. I don't know.
You know how I feel like that? When I'm wearing Wolf Nation clothing.
Well, you're not wearing it yet, though.
Well, I'm anticipating it. That's why I'm like, yeah, it's going to be so good. Wolf Nation.
Like, and you're drooling on yourself.
Yeah.
Pets. Like a wolf. Like a wolf. But anyway, again, so excited to work with Wolf Nation. WULF Nation. Wake up, live free. Wolf Nation, and trust me, I may have had my hands in some of the designs. Great designs coming out. It's not just urban. It's not just anything. That's going to be to everything. Girls, women, men. Some of them, girls and women.
Wow.
Some of them might be a little bit more, you know, like I said, urban street style looking, but some of it's going to be very classy. You know, dress shirts, things like that. We have a lot of things planned. So Wolf Nation, WULF Nation. Okay. Berlu.
Yeah.
Well, how do I explain this?
It's hard to explain, Berlu.
You're now in the hot seat.
What?
Episode 50, I threw myself on the line. I have my first stand-up clip of all time. Literally 12 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay, and this all ties together because Dom, like, brought up, like, your first stand-up experiences and all that. So we have yours.
Yeah.
In a way. So explain what we're going to hear here.
This was my
graduation. Other than bleeding ears.
Yeah. It was my graduation performance from Scotty's Comedy Cove Comedy School with Chip Ambrosia and Johnny Watson.
So before you name drop, this is what you paid for, the final product here.
Yes, this was the final product of making me the comedian that I am today.
Now, when you recorded this, were you happy with the set?
I was good for 2/3 of it. The end was kind of not the greatest, and I've never watched this at all. We've been kind of talking about this before. For the longest time, I'm not one to listen to my voice, and it probably took about the first the fifth episode before I would really like start listening to my voice and to the show and stuff, when I was like really into the tweeting and everything. So
right. So this could be cringeworthy for you.
I'm pretty much guaranteeing cringeworthy in my opinion.
But can you look back on it and appreciate it, laugh at it?
I will appreciate it. I'm kind of wondering the absolute ending, if that made it to tape, and if it doesn't, I guess I'll explain what happened.
Okay. So this is Michael Berlow's graduation set at the Comedy Cove. Now, Berlow, take a breath. You seem to be getting tense. Just listen to him. Listen, we've talked about... Now, think about in my position what we've revealed on the air, okay? Mm-hmm. Which, it always pisses me off if I look at the numbers. It's the highest listened to episode that everyone knows that I shit a bed. What else did I do in that episode?
Let's see.
I couldn't get it up.
Yeah, your family threw a watermelon in the pool.
Threw a watermelon in the pool when they met my soon-to-be wife. There was a lot there. And then I played my comedy set on the 50th episode. Mm-hmm. So I put myself out there. You know, like, this is like initiation, even though you've been on for like 40 episodes.
All right, I'll pull down my pants.
But we like to keep it open here. And, mm-hmm. you know, you wake up and you live free.
Yeah.
Here we go. And we'll stop it periodically and talk about the structure of your jokes. And people, this is how what you see comedians do. We are awful forever. And then something clicks and mm-hmm. it's like a drug. You're like, oh, yeah, I could do that again. Bomb, 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 bomb. And then good show. Bomb, 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 bomb. Good show. Here we go.
Hey, how you doing?
That's not Berlow.
Is that Jason Pollock, I think?
Your next act. Very funny. He graduated the class here. Mike Berlow.
Let's give it up, people. Michael Berlow. Everybody.
A lot of delay on that CD.
Yeah. That's all right. You're there.
Scott Hayes. This is great, man. I needed this and all. I've been a shut-in.
You needed this.
And all.
You needed this. And you decided, like, hey, Scott Hayes! Not bad, though. Not bad. You got them with you, behind you.
Yeah.
This is a good picture right here. Your eyes are closed. You're looking to the right. Looking. Let's hear a little bit. Let's go
into the hilarity that is Michael Berlow.
Right, here we go.
My apartment for the last 3 months, I've been bored out of my mind. I got plenty to do around there, but I'm just too damn lazy to do anything about it. I got a pile of dishes yay high, and I keep on coming up with new ways not to do it. I realized I had no clean teaspoons or tablespoons. I started eating with measuring spoons.
Good laugh.
Yeah.
Good laugh. Your pace...
A little fast.
A little fast. I know that.
Thank you.
I still do that. They're like, you have 7 minutes. I'm like, I got to cram all these new bits into one thing.
Yeah.
Pace a little fast. Punchline good. Thank you. So far, so good. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't heard you do that bit before.
Yeah, I know. Yep. I know.
Here we go. Here we go.
I didn't even know I did it on that one.
Hmm?
I didn't even know I had that joke back then.
You're a savant, dude.
It works in all ages.
I do. You're like Carlin, man.
With a quarter of a teaspoon, you can't even get 2 Cheerios in that thing. It took me 3 hours to eat breakfast yesterday.
So far, they're with you, dude. They're with you.
They were with me.
They're with you.
Yeah.
And like, part of your comedy course was when you pay the audience to come in, right? You give them $10 a
hand. I think I brought 5 that night. It was one of those usual disappointing Berlow, when you do it, I'm going to be there, blah, blah, blah. Invite 200 people, and I had to beg 3 out of the 5 to show up.
So far, not bad, dude. Mm. Compared to my first set when I was 21 years old,
yeah,
better. But you're the better comedian here.
And those things are dirty and all mean stuff out of a bowl like I'm drinking water from a creek. Oh, that's good clam chowder. Got a ton of chores to do. Keep finding new ways and all just to do it as quickly as possible. Make excuses. I was in the bathroom taking a whiz and some pee hit the floor.
Now, I love, you're like a guy that keeps a saying alive, man. Uh-huh. You keep taking a whiz alive. I haven't heard that since Like, I remember being, I'm going to take a whiz, man. You're like keeping things alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all you were doing.
That's all I do.
But the Clem Chowder thing, I never even heard you do that. The straw thing.
I never got like huge. Yeah. It sounded decent there, but it wasn't never like.
It sounded decent, but yeah. In reality.
It wasn't decent. It
wasn't bad. You always have energy here. We're watching. You have energy. You're not like.
That was still back in the days where I was pretty much doing my Ray Lewis dance before I'd go up on stage.
So you mean present day? Present day, I think you did the Ray Lewis dance the other night at the show just to make the announcement.
Really?
No, it was a joke. See, we joke here.
Well, let me comment on your joke. It didn't really come through that well.
I bombed.
Yeah.
I bombed. But the Ray Lewis dance, have we even talked about that?
I know you videotaped and put it on the Michael Berlew comedian page.
Oh, Berlew does, let's get through the set. Okay.
So I got some tissue paper and wiped it up. And I noticed the floor was a little brighter than usual, so I just turned back and said, you know what, that counts as mopping.
Good laugh.
For 2 months.
Ew. I want to go back real quick. Let's listen to the ew. That's great.
Yeah, I'm good for 2 months. I'll tell you one thing, people give you the weirdest look when you mop the kitchen floor the same way. Be done in a minute, guys. You sure?
Hey, there's a little acting here, too, man.
I got, like, chimed on that. They're like, oh, you're not supposed to turn your back to the crowd.
Oh, stop. Comedy is comedy.
Oh, okay.
You're not supposed to turn your back to the crowd. You ever watch Jim Brewer?
Yeah.
He's like runs around the stage all night.
I should have paid you for these comedy lessons.
Well, I think it's good. I like the acting out. And you're turning your head to the audience. So far, not bad, dude.
Thank you.
So what happened? No.
I think joke 3.
Here we go. Hold on. We're getting there. Yeah. You start off relatively hot, dude. Relatively hot.
Yeah. You don't want anything to eat? I miss my friends. I miss hanging out with my friends. The problem is nobody's got any money. You know, it's terrible. My friend was telling me he was looking at his bank statement, and he saw a fee he never saw before, so he called up the bank, and he said, sir, your balance went too low, so we had to charge you a fee. He's like, was it overdrawn? They're like, no, sir. You didn't hit our minimum balance requirements, so we had to penalize you. So he's like, let me get this straight. I don't have any money in this world, and your resolution to this is to take more money away from me?
I don't mind that either. That's not a bad premise.
Yeah, I don't think this is my original act.
So you took it from someone?
No, that's why I'm confused. Like, I was hearing these stuff, and they're like, I don't think that's my original jokes. I must have paid for, like, another comp, or, like, maybe Johnny Hollywood recorded one, and I paid for it. I thought that was my, I'm going to have to look for it.
There's no way this is your first time. First.
I know it's not, because I know the first one started with a locomotion joke.
You're not doing bad here.
Thank you.
I like the premise of I got no money. I get charged.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
You like it?
Well, let's wait.
How's this problem going to get fixed again? It's kind of like if you go to the doctor's office with a pulled groin, and his treatment is to punch you in the crotch. Yeah, it hurts around here. It's hard to walk it. Ah! Tell me if it hurts again in a month, I'll do it again. I got to start hanging out with ladies. How are you ladies doing tonight?
One thing I could tell you're a Segway master.
Yeah. I get punched in the crotch. How you ladies doing tonight?
And before it was like, yeah, pee on the floor. My friend tells me that. You got like that Steve Harvey thing going. My friend tells me that. Here we go.
Lady in the house, apparently. I love you, ladies. Never had much luck with you, but I do love you. I remember when it all started. It was around 14. I was at the junior high dance, and I couldn't get anything to happen. I started trying to talk to these girls, trying to get them out on the dance floor. They wanted nothing to do with me. Spent most of the night sitting on by myself and all feeling down about everything. And there was only one thing that made me happy. The DJ started playing the Locomotion. Because I don't care who you are, when the Locomotion is playing, you get happy. Am I right, sir?
Got a little crowd play there.
Little.
Not doing bad.
Yeah. Well, like I said, this ain't the original.
This is not dreadful.
No.
You need to go find the original.
Yeah, I will. I'm kind of shocked this wasn't my original.
Well, let's still do the yeah. comedy critique.
Yeah.
I'm not messing with you, son. But I heard that. I got excited. I got up. I ran out to the dance floor. I got to the end of the train. I'm dancing. I'm feeling happy. Life is actually good for a moment. And a couple minutes in, I started wondering, why are there more people on the dance floor dancing? So I look around, and I turn my head, and notice all the good-looking girls started second train 5 feet behind me. These girls were so repulsed, they started second locomotion. These girls started an underground railroad just not to touch me. As I look back at them in awe, wondering what's going on, they realize I see them, and they start dancing in another direction. You think I'm not going to notice a 20-person conga line running away from me?
Not bad.
Yeah. I'm kind of feeling good. I got to do this more often.
Not bad.
That was my first set. And
actually, watching you, you're like, you're pretty confident up there.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for you to bomb. I'm actually praying for you to just throw a joke there and get tomatoes thrown at you.
Well, it's not on this. I don't even remember. I'm trying to remember where this. I mean, obviously it's at the Comedy Club. I'm trying to remember what was the act or the event. If it was like a new talent night or something like that.
Well, this ties into something I want to do on the show. I want to start putting little, like, 30 second to a minute clips of comedy that we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Not giving away bits, but, like, putting little things in there that might be funny. So, could be a while, people, but, all right, let's keep it going.
All right. It just took me by surprise and all. I got upset. I just started looking at them. I just screamed at them, "Oh, come on! And do the locomotion with me!"
All right, people. Berlew said this is his first set. He might be bringing one of his best sets to the audience.
I, in all honesty, I'm kind of disappointed. I'm in a bad mood. This kind of makes me feel good. It makes me feel confident in myself. But at the same time, I was kind of like, all right, let me get my initiation. And I'm kind of like, oh.
See, this is how the show goes. Like, you know, we were playing Humiliation Battleship. My board didn't work, so I got to tell and deliver the worst things. You basically told, like, I was in the bathroom. I was naked somewhere and hiding in the bathroom.
You don't even remember my stories, do you?
Yeah, I do. You were in the bathroom hiding from someone.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Yeah, I remember.
A walking detour sign for the opposite sex.
There's no way this is the first show because it's like 10 minutes long too. They would never give you that much time.
I think it was like you had up to like 7 minutes, but I did like 5 minutes. I'm gonna have to look around.
I think this video is like 10 minutes.
Look in my mouth, get out of the room, and start screaming for the dentist. So right at the bat, you can tell it's gonna be a good story for me. And after the cleaning, she comes back and she tells me I have a very unique physical trait. I have a Siamese tooth. This is a true thing. I have two teeth joined together in one root. And she started telling me how rare it is. I'm like, yeah, whatever. She's like, no, you don't understand. This is quite a unique thing, you know. And it's such an honor for somebody in this industry to see something like that. So a couple minutes, I'm starting to feel good, but she kept on talking about it. She's like, you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of when you go to the state fair and you see the two-headed goat for the first time in your life.
I'm feeling good about
that. Yeah. See, you know, like, I don't get it. Like, this is, like, one of the better sets I've seen you perform.
Again, it wasn't my plan. I'm
I see your plan, bro. I see through you.
No, Scott, this is my worst performance ever.
Oh, so I did
so nervous.
This is my first day.
I just threw it together at the last moment.
On that note, I don't think we're gonna play the rest of this.
Yeah. I'll find the real one. I know I have it somewhere.
So. He will. So Mike Berlew, we're gonna come in on the show. I want to thank Dom for coming on and interviewing us. We may split that up into two, maybe throw like a 20 and a 20 segment on there, on different episodes, especially when we got some really good guests coming on though.
Oh, I'm excited.
I'll throw their names out there and we'll see if that happens. We have Lester Spate, which is Terry Tate, which is the man who, you know, come dip down up in Terry's house. coming up, we have, I hope I say her name right, Katra Corbett, who is an ultra marathon runner. Now, Berlew, you do a little ultra running every once in a while, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, 100 miles every once in a while is no big deal.
Well, I do like 500 feet.
So we have her coming up. We got Seymour Swan,
yeah.
Who's been around the business, worked with the Wayans brothers, done a million different things. We got Mike Gaffney coming up. Mm-hmm. We got Kane Callis coming up. We have the Cinema Snob. We might have something going on with the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That I'm excited about.
Yeah. So a lot of different things coming up on the podcast, and we appreciate your support. So before we sign off, Michael Berlew, anything to promote?
I heard about this. It's a mic coming up in East Stroudsburg. It's being promoted by James Camacho. It's at the Comedy Cabaret at the Pocono Cinema.
The Poconos? Where's the Poconos located?
Somewhere between the New Yorkers and the Rockawayas.
The Joyces.
But that's at 88 Cortland Street in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. It's starting up in October 11th. It's going to be a Sunday mic, and they're going to be working to start doing shows there. So if interested, you can contact the Pocono Cinema, or you can look on Facebook for James Camacho to get more details of your comedian.
Okay, and on a serious note, the podcast will be hopefully doing something for a very good cause. A couple months ago, some of you may have heard that a kid was on a boat and was hit by the boat and passed away. And the guy was actually my DJ at my wedding, and he was the guy driving the boat, and he was the father of the child.
Oh, God.
So they started a campaign called Kindness for Christopher, and it's all about paying things forward and doing kind things for strangers and things like that. They were just on the news today and stuff like that. So the podcast may have him on coming up. Even if we don't have him on, if you look up the words Kindness for Christopher on Facebook, the family is trying to heal by doing good things, doing positive things. And to me, there's you know, I could promote my comedy shows and stuff like that. It doesn't make any difference. Something like that is, it was one of the most tragic stories I've ever heard in my entire life. And so if you go to Kindness for Christopher on Facebook and you look it up and it's been on, send a message or do what they're trying to ask you to do, which is just do something kind for people and a stranger especially. As far as I'm trying to get him on just to talk about it and trying to help the cause and stuff like that. And it's, like I said, on a more serious note, on far as a comedy note, I'll be at Bust a Gut Comedy Club this Saturday, down in Ocean. So look that up, support it, spread the word around. It only goes to a good cause. So I want to thank Dom Bagnuto. And one more time, let's talk about our new sponsor, Wolf Nation, bro.
Woo-hoo!
Wolf Nation.
Like I said, a clothing company that's coming soon, very soon. And it should be out there. I have a shirt. Shirts look really good. And the apparel looks really good. And I think that's it, man. I think that's it for this week. We went long this week, I know. But when we get back in studio, you never know what happens. And look out for our guests. And life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
With the wolf pack.
Who has the guts to come in the ring tonight? Who care about the